When we start to meditate and try to develop concentration on the breath or the footsteps, we soon find that there are certain thoughts in the mind that are causing us difficulties and problems, which draw our attention away from the meditation object. We find we can't stay with the breath or the footsteps for more than a few moments. These obstacles to concentration also sometimes cause the building of stress in the body and the mind. Within the Buddha's teaching, these obstacles to concentration are called the five hindrances. In meditation leading to vipassana, working with these hindrances is a large part of our practice. They can be used as vehicles for insight and understanding. We can learn to recognize thought and the mind states they produce when they arise. We can learn to step back a little and observe the effect on the body and the mind. We can try to observe their particular energy as it is, trying not to get lost in them and trying not to push them away. Objectively observing them, we gradually understand their nature and can learn how to let go of attachment to them. Generally, the usual response to these thoughts and emotions is to get involved in them, and we get caught in a cycle of reaction. Our contacts with everything become clouded and colored by them. They gain in power and dominate the mind. When this happens, it's very difficult to see things in a clear way. All we see then is our views and opinions about things. It's a bit like putting on tinted glasses and viewing the whole world through them. Everything gets stained by the color of the glasses. We're trying to build awareness. When we continually recognize these hindrances in the mind, we'll gain in the ability to observe them without continuing to feed them. We can recognize their nature, see the effect on the body and the mind, be able to see their impermanent, unsatisfactory nature. With the continual investigation and seeing in this way, compassion may arise for the difficulty in the body and the mind, and we'll gently be able to let go of them. We'll be able to see their impermanent nature. They arise and they pass away. If we never look at them objectively, but continually become involved in them, I'm angry, I want, I am worried, rather than there is anger, there is desire, there is worry, we won't be able to allow them to pass through the mind, and they'll continue to cause a long chain of thought and reaction. In the beginning, we'll only be able to recognize these hindrances after we've become involved in them for some time. We may notice first the continual struggle and stress, the inability to concentrate, or simply that we've become lost and aren't really clear what we've been thinking. This moment of mindfulness is very precious. This moment of mindfulness allows us to investigate and gently let go. With the gradual building of mindfulness and compassionate understanding, we'll gradually be able to see the hindrances closer to the beginning of their arising. Rather than viewing what arises in the mind, thoughts, emotions, as a problem, something we have to destroy or annihilate at all costs, they can become vehicles for insight, understanding, and compassion. Vipassana meditation seeks to develop non-attached awareness and clear understanding of the characteristics of the body and the mind, and be able to see their impermanent, unsatisfactory, impersonal conditioned nature. Things are arising in the body and the mind. The breath is coming and going. Thoughts are arising in the mind and passing away. Feelings in the body are arising and passing away. This is a reflection of the continual change in nature. When these hindrances arise, we try to use mindfulness and be aware that one has arisen. We try to note it, and if we can, we let it go, seeing it pass away. If it's difficult or sticky, we become very involved in it. We can investigate into its nature, and we may be able to let go easier. Try not to have aversion towards them being there. Just try to recognize them when they've arisen. Try to use compassionate understanding that the mind is a product and process of conditioning. The thoughts arising in the present are the fruits of our past conditioning and actions. The conditioning of society, our family, our friends, our teachers, how we have thought and reacted in the past. Suppressing them is one extreme. Indulging in them is the other. If we suppress these things, we won't get to know and understand them and have the opportunity to let them go. If we indulge in them, we'll be continually under their power, sowing causes for their continual arising in the future. We won't be able to see deeper into their nature, and we'll be continually unable to get beyond their power to dominate the mind. Habitual thinking will continue to arise in the mind, especially the untrained mind. A great deal of patience, perseverance, effort and energy, and compassionate understanding, that gentle, caring attitude is needed. It often feels very difficult with the resisting of the impulse to flow with habitual energy and step back. Just watch, without suppressing or indulging. But that's okay. Part of developing deeper inner peace and balance is the developing of the ability to be with an uncomfortable energies, understand them, and gradually be able to transform these energies into more positive energies. One may begin to see that the mind and the mind objects are different, that the mind has the ability to be unaffected and see the arising and passing of these energies. Persistence, patience, compassion, and the willingness to continually start again is what is needed. Often it doesn't feel like we're doing very much if we can't stay with the breath or the footsteps for very long. Yet, just by trying to come back, recognize what's in the mind, one is building patience, perseverance, effort and energy, and compassionate understanding of our own mind and the minds of others. One is also learning to gently resist impulsive reaction to and indulgence in thought. This in turn will allow us to let go easier and develop equanimity. Equanimity is that evenness of mind that can be with whatever arises with more balance. So the first hindrance to recognize is sense desire. Sense desire is a feeling of wanting, a feeling of incompleteness and poverty in the mind. There's the desire for pleasant sights, sounds, odors, tastes, pleasant feelings in the body. And when these have arisen, the wish for them not to end, or the wish for them to be continually available to us. Sense desire is a constant thirst and reaching for, and the particular energy of desire is a very strong one for most of us. For much of our life it has dominated and ruled us. Also, a lot of our dissatisfaction arises because what we have in this moment is just not good enough. We continue to seek the excitement of a better sight, a better sound, the most delicious food, the best partner. We want to be admired. We want to be loved. We're continually seeking experience that will satisfy us. It's not the object of the desire that causes the difficulty for us. It's the feeling of lack within ourselves. And the deep-held belief that if we had everything we wanted, then we would be happy. Most of us have had a great opportunity in our life to satisfy a lot of our desires. All of us grew up in a fairly wealthy country with abundance of food, clothes, material things, and many opportunities that you probably took for granted. Yet, by having this abundance of opportunity and continually satisfying your desires, have you gained serenity and peace of mind? The problem with seeking lasting happiness and peace in sense experience is that it's so temporary, so fleeting, and so dependent on external things which are in themselves so impermanent. Sure, it satisfies for a short while, but is often followed by boredom, dissatisfaction, and the seeking of a new experience. How many of us get lost in the very common thought pattern of, if only. If only I had the money to go traveling and didn't have to go to work, now then I'd be happy. If only I had some land somewhere, well then I'd be happy. If only I had a better job, well then I'd be happy. If only I could meet the right person, my partner, well then I'd be happy. If only I had a room to myself here at this retreat, well then I'd be happy. If only they had better meditation cushions to sit on, softer maybe, well then I'd be happy. This can go on and on and on and on. If only this, if only that, well then I'd be happy. We may continually postpone peace and happiness. We may never reflect on, see the painfulness and stress of desire and living our life in this way. Also, our peace and happiness remains dependent on something outside of ourselves. Perhaps peace may be a fading away of this stress without having to gain anything. The absence of desire and learning how to flow into the moment with non-resistance, non-clinging, whatever the moment may contain. So how does desire arise for us while we're practicing in a meditation retreat? A common one for most of us is that it's getting nearer to mealtime, and we find it really hard to be with the breath or the footsteps just before mealtime. Our mind starts to wander off to food. I wonder what they're having for lunch today. I wonder what they're having for dinner. Well, what I'd actually like is a candy bar. That would be great. Many people find it very difficult to be with each step as they're walking to mealtime. We can start to daydream about music, start singing in our head. Seems much more exciting and creative than sitting here in silence, watching the breathing. And planning our future, that seems much more exciting to many meditators than sitting here in silence, watching the breathing. On a more subtle level, there's the desire for bliss, bright lights, visions in the meditation, the desire to be concentrated for the whole sit, even the desire for the next breath, and especially for that bell to ring. Desire is a reaching out, wanting to gain something, a feeling of lack and non-contentment. This is very different to the feeling of flowing into the moment with non-resistance, non-clinging, settling back, which can be a fullness. So what do we do with all this desire? The first thing is to recognize it and note it just for what it is. Desire, desire. Try not to add aversion towards it being there. That condemning quality of mind doesn't carry with it the compassionate understanding that the mind is a product and process of conditioning. And we try not to indulge it either, realizing that by doing so, we remain under its power, claim its stress, and continually reach out for and be dependent on external things. Thus, we may never know the peace that comes from within. Try to watch desire, recognize it, see its agitation and turbulence. We can gently let go and return to the primary object of meditation. With this clear seeing, mental noting, there's a gentle deconditioning of the mind. The strengthening of mindfulness and our ability to let go. There's also the increasing of understanding of the mind and seeing the nature of sense desire as stressful. Also, it arises, stays for a while, and passes away. It is impermanent. So the first hindrance to recognize is sense desire. The second hindrance is aversion. Not liking. This is the opposite of desire. It's a pushing away rather than a reaching for. There are, for all of us, things in life that are unpleasant. This is normal. What we add to this unpleasantness is aversion, the condemning quality of mind. Anger and aversion have a rather strong energy, and because it's such a strong energy, many people find it quite stimulating. They enjoy the involvement, the absence of boredom and dullness. Anger and aversion give them a powerful sense of identity. However, these people haven't yet investigated the negative effect anger and aversion have on their own mind and body, and the negative effect anger and aversion have on other people when it's thrown at them. It's pretty easy to see the devastating effect anger and aversion has had and is having in this world. There's many forms of aversion. There's jealousy, judgment, fear, prejudice, irritation, annoyance. There's aversion towards people who are not pleasing to us, who challenge us in any way, who hold different beliefs and opinions to us, and do not fulfill our expectations of them. These experiences of pushing away and condemning create deep impressions in the mind. They can cause the mind to simmer after the past, long after the actual event has ceased, ruining our present moment, our peace. When we try to concentrate on the breath or the footsteps, these deep impressions from the past often surface. If we don't have enough awareness and the ability to recognize anger and aversion for what they are, we may go into recreating these scenes from the past, building the cycle of thought and reaction to thought. Anger and aversion can also arise when desires are frustrated and expectations are not fulfilled. When we don't get what we want, we may start to blame the outside, judging situations and people, elevating ourselves in comparison, justifying our anger and aversion. Our usual way has been like this. The stress, the unpleasant feelings that we experience are the characteristics of anger and aversion, frustrated desire, and unfulfilled expectations. The cause of the stress lies within our own mind, in our reaction to experience. But our usual way is to blame the outside rather than our own reaction. In this retreat, you cannot talk to the other meditators. So if you're experiencing anger and aversion, you cannot express it. So it remains with you. From this, it's fairly easy to see that the others aren't having difficulties from this. You are, through your reaction to experience. So what are some of the common aversions meditators may experience during a retreat? We may be sitting here peacefully, and finally, we're with the breathing. It's going in, it's going out, it's rising, falling. We're actually staying with it for a change. Then the person next to us starts to fidget. Perhaps they get up and leave the hall. Suddenly our mind is off. Why can't they sit still? It's distracting me. Perhaps the staff is making some noise and you may get caught in judging them. Perhaps you feel there's too much sitting or too much walking or too much standing. Somehow we make ourselves into instant experts on what a meditation retreat should be and how it should be organized. We may be having difficulty sitting and concentrating. The actuality of the retreat may be quite different from our projected hopes of good times and an easy high. So we may start to blame the schedule, the teachers. How can they be so insensitive? They make us sit and walk, and sit and walk, and stand even, and sit and walk, and stand some more, and sit and walk, and sit and walk. It's just too much. And then in the next moment, you may place the blame on yourself, building self-aversion. I can't meditate. You look around the hall. Everybody else is sitting up like little Buddhas. And here I am. I can't concentrate. I can't sit still. There's really no hope for me. My mind is a hopeless mess. So what do we do with this aversion? First, we can try to prevent it from arising. When hearing a sound, try to note hearing. The same with odors, smelling. See how they arise, exist for a while, and pass away. Try to apply mindfulness to your sense contacts. If you miss this and find that you're lost in aversion, try to recognize it. You may have been thinking in this way for some time. That doesn't matter. You've now become aware. Objectively noting aversion, aversion. Try to see its true nature without adding more aversion, that is, aversion towards your aversion. This only continues the energy of aversion and prevents you letting go. We can realize that this tendency of mind is deeply conditioned from our past conditioning and actions, recognizing the law of conditioning, but also realize that we have the opportunity to weaken this conditioning by learning how to let it go. But sometimes we can't let go simply through the objective noting because the involvement, the justifications are very deep. So what do we do then? In this case, we can investigate. So what do I mean, investigate? We are not going to investigate the object of your aversion, who or what your aversion is directed towards, the storyline, or why you feel justified in having the aversion, as this only makes it stronger. Instead, we're going to investigate into the characteristics of anger and aversion. So what is anger? What is aversion? How does it feel in your body? And how does it feel in your mind? Run your attention through your body. Past the eyes, are they closed tightly? What about the jaw? Is it clenched? What about the neck and the shoulders? Do they feel contracted and tight? What about the hands? Are they clenched? What about the chest and the stomach? Does it feel contracted and tight? And what about the breath? Is it rough? Is it short? Clearly open to the stress and unsatisfactoriness of aversion. With awareness and wisdom, we see aversion's nature clearly as stress. If we never open to it, being willing to investigate into its nature, we'll never see aversion clearly as stress. We may not wish to let go of attachment to it, our self-righteous justifications, and the blame we place on the outside for our own suffering. If we open to it, compassion may arise for ourselves, and we gently learn how to let go. Forgiving ourselves, letting go of the wish to manipulate others, and bending the strong energy of aversion and transforming it into compassionate understanding. As our awareness becomes stronger, we'll begin to know when aversion is present in the mind. If we're able to note it and investigate into its nature, rather than just continuing it through our attachment to it, we'll begin to see how it arises and how we can bring compassionate understanding to all the unpleasant things that activate it. Through understanding its energy and the unsatisfactoriness of it, we build the ability to let go, strengthened by compassion, and it will gain less power over us. So there's sense desire and aversion. The third hindrance is sloth and torpor. So what does this mean? In common language, sloth and torpor means boredom, laziness, inertness, not wishing to put forth energy, sleepiness. You may find sleepiness and tiredness a challenge in the first few days of a retreat. This is because you're doing something different. You're waking up at 5 a.m. I wonder how many of you usually do this. You're trying to sit and walk all through the day. It's a lot different to what a lot of you may be used to doing, and it's certainly a lot different to simply lying on a beach. Sleepiness and tiredness are very common, and most meditators experience this. Try to have patience with it, realizing that as the retreat progresses, you'll probably get more used to the conditions, and you may find the mind becoming brighter. This has been the experience of many meditators. Try to recognize and observe the sleepy mind. Dull, inert, lacking in energy, making all things fuzzy and unclear. Often what we do in the next moment is bring up aversion to it, wanting it to go away. I don't want to feel sleepy. I don't want to feel like this. Or aversion to the schedule. Well, it's just too hard. But bringing up aversion only uses up the little energy we did have in the mind, and then we just get more sleepy. The attachment to it, sinking into the pleasantness of the dullness, often results in our giving up in the sit and the walk. So how do we work with sloth and torpor? When it's present, it's very difficult to be with the breathing. The breath is a very fine and subtle object, and the mind has just become too dull. Trying to watch the breath with sleepiness in the mind is a bit like a person lost in a forest in a fog, trying to find their way out of the forest by recognizing small pebbles, small stones on the ground. This is very difficult. But if they bring their attention to a huge rock or a familiar tree outline, it's much easier to find their way out of the forest. In this case, that huge rock or boulder is your body. Take your attention away from the breathing and bring it to your body. Run your attention through your body. Feel the heaviness of the eyes and note this. Heavy, heavy. Perhaps the head has tilted. Hold it. Doesn't feel very good. Feel it. Allow the mindfulness to arise. Note it. Tilted, tilted. Then mindfully straighten it. Perhaps the back has slouched. Hold it. Feel it. Allow the mindfulness to arise. Note it. Slouched, slouched. Then mindfully straighten it. Perhaps the body is swayed. Hold it. Feel it. Doesn't feel very good. Allow the mindfulness to arise. Note it. Swayed, swayed. Then mindfully straighten it. Keep running your attention through the body, from the head to the feet and the feet to the head, trying not to bring up aversion towards the heaviness in the body and trying to strengthen your body awareness. If you're still having difficulties with it, open your eyes, look down in front of you about 1.5 meters, try not to get involved with the pattern on the person's shirt in front of you, that'll really get you sleepy. In fact, don't try to see anything external, but bring your whole attention inward to feel your body with your eyes open. Feel your whole body sitting there and note it, sitting, sitting. Then take your attention to your body touching. Feel the touch of the right buttock on the pillow and note this, touching, touching. Take the attention to your right knee, feel it touching and note this, touching, touching. Take the attention to your right foot and feel this, touching and note it, touching, touching, taking the attention to the left buttock, touching the pillow or the mat, and note it, touching, touching, taking the attention to the left knee, wherever it's touching, and note this, touching, touching, taking the attention to the left foot and feel it touching, and note this, touching, touching, feeling the hands together or wherever they're touching, and note this, touching, touching, feeling the whole body sitting, and note this, sitting, sitting. What this does is break up the sleepiness with moments of body awareness. You may find that the sleepiness may pass and be followed by a bright mind. When we investigate without condemning or attachment, we see sloth's nature is impermanent. In Vipassana meditation, we try not to push anything away. Instead, we investigate and see things as they are, not what we think they are, or think they should be, or want them to be, but the actuality of what they are. If you're having a lot of difficulty with this, I do have a few more hints for you. In the early morning, when you hear the wake-up bell, instead of rolling over for another half an hour sleep, get up straight away, walk mindfully to the bathroom, splash some cold water on your face to try to wake yourself up. I won't tell you to take a cold bath. I'll leave that for Thailand. Many people find it quite refreshing. And if you happen to get to the hall early, then it's okay. Do a bit of walking meditation outside before you come in and sit. You may have wondered why we gave so much time between the wake-up bell and the first sitting. This is to help get your body moving. Getting your body moving and trying to be aware of your body moving helps to gradually wake yourself up. If you do roll over for another half an hour's sleep, it's a little bit safer here, but in Thailand I was following a person on the pathway one day in the morning, and this person veered off the pathway into the jungle. I had to go rescue them, and we have cobras there. So it's rather dangerous. Perhaps it's not so dangerous here, but I don't know what's in the forest. So get up straight away and get your body moving. You can also try to watch the amount of food that you eat. Eating too much often causes a heavy feeling to arise in the body and the mind. And when this happens, it's very easy to get sleepy. So try cutting down on the amount that you eat. Don't fill your stomach up completely. Leave a bit of space in it. A few spoonfuls less. Also, a quick, brisk walk after mealtimes often helps. You can also increase the volume and the frequency of your mental noting. Turn up the volume a little and try to make it more continuous. It's important to know the difference between sleepiness that arises from boredom and the sleepiness that arises after a long, hard day. Try not to create ideals and push the mind to excesses. Here you have the opportunity to get an adequate amount of sleep. You also have time after mealtimes to relax, so a lot of the sleepiness you may feel may not be due to lack of sleep. It may be you're just not used to working the mind so much to develop mindfulness and concentration and bringing up the effort needed to do so. It may be you are getting bored with this such a neutral object such as the breath or the footsteps, it just doesn't seem exciting enough. It may be you didn't catch the aversion that came before it that used up the energy in the mind. And it may be you just don't want to look at something in your mind. You'd rather hide from it. Try not to give up and drift into it. Try to bring up a little bit of effort to investigate into its nature, or at least have patience with it until it passes. Try not to form a project mentality. Well, I'm going to be aware of the body for a few moments and then the sleepiness has to pass for the rest of the retreat. It usually doesn't work that way. Try to focus on its impermanence more moment to moment as you become aware of the body, how the sleepiness lessens. Try to focus also on those moments of brightness within the fog, and this may encourage you. So there's sense desire, aversion, and sloth and torpor. The fourth hindrance is restlessness and worry. This is the opposite to sloth and torpor. Restlessness and worry often manifest with out-of-control thoughts. There's often no rhyme nor reason to them. There may be a feeling of agitation and speediness, thoughts going on, into the past, into the future, here, there, and everywhere. Jumping into the future, we create situations and worry about what may never happen, creating fear and anxiety. Jumping into the past, we stir up memories, creating guilt and grief, becoming upset. This can overwhelm the mind. Restlessness and worry is usually a very strong hindrance for all those who are starting to train the mind in meditation. Much of our excitement and identity is concerned with the future and the past, and staying in the present moment seems very difficult for us. This agitation in the mind often manifests in the body as a powerful urge to get up and go away. There's often a pressure in the body and the mind, and sometimes it gets so strong we'll feel we'd just explode soon if this sit doesn't end soon and the bell doesn't ring. A common meditator worry is the projection into the hugeness, the enormity of the task. Gazing forward, putting into this moment all of the rest of the moments we're going to have to deal with. The next 8 days. The next 3 sits. The 5 a.m. wake-up bell tomorrow. I can't possibly wake up at 5 a.m. I'm exhausted now. Try to remind yourself you only have to deal with the next breath, the next step, not the whole of the retreat. This day, not the whole of the rest of your life. What you're capable of doing now, do. In the future, the mind will have changed in some way. And then again, there'll be just one moment arising after another to deal with. As the mind gets stronger, its limits will expand. Try not to create limits that are static and unreal. Try to let the fear drop away whenever you catch this tendency. Feel the stress in the body and look at the suffering in the mind. Try not to draw away from it. If you open to it, compassion may arise for the stress and you want to let go. Allow yourself to feel the relief of coming back to deal with only this moment. Now, it's the letting go of worry and fear. Try to allow yourself to feel this moment of letting go deeply, the absence of turmoil, the spaciousness. At this moment, you experience the fruits of letting go immediately, and this experience will help you to let go in the future. By not hiding from the uncomfortable energies in the mind, restlessness, fear, worry, guilt, grief, we can recognize and learn how to deal with them. Also, we may be able to recognize them more easily in the future. Ah, there's fear. I know you. You're just paper tigers come to try to scare me. Try not to react with a heavy judging mind or conceptual thoughts such as worry is bad, fear is bad, restlessness is bad. It's not clearly seeing its actual energy and letting go through compassionate understanding of its energy. Also, try not to have excessive idealism that you shouldn't have fear, worry, restlessness. Again, try to remember the law of conditioning. The thoughts arising in the present are the fruits of our past conditioning, actions, ways of living. How we deal with them now, however, creates conditions for our future. If you find it difficult to open to these energies in this way, you can instead increase the concentration factor in the mind by using a few words, a small phrase, such as just one breath at a time, just one step at a time. Start again, start again. Care for each step, care for each breath, whatever words appeal to you. This puts a brake on the projection and out of control mind with an aid to concentration. Also, it adds an extra encouragement for the mind. Often what starts out simply as restlessness and lots of thinking can start a chain of hindrances if not caught in the beginning. It often goes like this. Restlessness arises. We start to have aversion towards our restlessness and thoughts, which is followed with a desire for a better experience. All this thinking uses up the energy in the mind, and sloth and torpor arises. With sloth and torpor in the mind, it's difficult to see anything clearly, so a lot of doubt and self-hatred arises. This is called the multiple hindrance attack. I wonder if any of you have experienced it yet. Most new meditators experience it quite often, and even those who have practiced for some time have it arise from time to time. This can be discouraging. We can feel it's just hopeless. Try to encourage yourself at these times. Try not to let it get you down. It's a normal experience when we train the mind in meditation. The conditioning up until now has been to allow the thoughts to be dominant. This conditioning is very strong. The conditioning to mindfulness and developing mindfulness and concentration are fairly weak because it's something new you're doing. Try not to hate yourself or the mind for what it is. The difficult times often test us the most and teach us the most. It may give us the opportunity to build the beneficial balancing energies in the mind, build the patience, perseverance, effort and energy, and compassionate understanding of the mind, even simply to be in the constant onslaught of thoughts in a more balanced way. To see the thoughts coming and going, often with no rhyme nor reason to them, like bubbles in a stream, sometimes useless, sometimes intelligent, sometimes lofty, sometimes low, sometimes sublime. Ask yourself at these times, so which of these thoughts is really me? And in these times there may be the ability to detach and gain insight into the non-personal quality of thought. So there's sense desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, and restlessness and worry. The fifth and last hindrance is doubt. Often the most difficult to recognize, and unfortunately for many Western meditators, often the strongest hindrance, which makes it our path just a little bit more difficult. Doubt is the hesitation in the mind. Doubt is a blockage, a dark fog, a not knowing, and especially a lack of confidence. There's doubt about ourselves. We're having difficulty sitting and concentrating. We open our eyes, and just for that moment, everybody else is sitting very strongly. Everybody else can meditate. I can't. There's doubt about the retreat. We're not allowed to talk to each other. We're not even supposed to smile at each other or look at each other. We're sitting, we're standing, walking back and forth. Sitting, standing some more, and walking back and forth. Sitting, standing some more, and walking back and forth. Walking back and forth. Walking back and forth. Is this some type of mental hospital? There's doubt about the teachers. Well, these people come from Thailand and they don't look very special. No beads, no beard, thank goodness. No robes. They're not even a monk or a nun. There's doubt about the teaching. Is this the right path for me? How am I going to become enlightened? Gain answers to all my burning questions, sitting here watching my breathing. There's doubt about whether we're practicing correctly, and there's doubts about whether we'll possibly be able to make 8 more days of this. Doubt is an important hindrance to recognize because the power of doubt lies in its ability to stop us, make us run away from the challenges in our life and dissolve the best of intentions. With doubt in the mind, there's not a lot of practice done, just a lot of thinking and half-hearted effort. Because it's such a stop-start practice, results don't come quickly, if at all. Because results don't come quickly, we start to blame the method rather than our doubt and lack of effort. It's also dangerous that if we hold on to the doubt without asking questions to try to clear up the doubt, it can easily transform into aversion towards the person or thing doubted. With aversion in the mind, there's a turning away and a wish not to listen or simply seek out reasons why we shouldn't listen and justifications for doubting. This does not mean we accept things blindly. We weigh what we hear intelligently, trying to stay open. And if it sounds like it may be of help to us, we put in the effort to practice and confirm things from our own experience. Without some effort to practice, anything that's shared with you remains the Buddha's and our understanding, not yours. So how do we work with doubt? First, we have to recognize it as doubt, difficult enough. The hesitation in the mind gives you the clue Also, there may be a lot of arguments and debates going on in the mind. It's very important to use your mental noting here. If you have an idea that it may be doubt, put a mental note on it. Doubt, doubt. Otherwise, if you don't get some space in between the doubt and the observer of the doubt, you continually spin in the doubt. Again, the hesitation in the mind gives you the clue. With self-doubt, we could reflect that a lot of it comes from a sense of unworthiness that has been conditioned into us and by the competitive drive in the West. Try not to compare yourself with anyone else. Just do the best that you can. You may feel inspired by others, but try not to add unworthiness and self-doubt. Often it comes from creating ideals on what we think things should be. In Vipassana meditation, we're working and investigating into what things are, not what we think they are or think they should be. We're trying to develop the ability to be with what is arising with equanimity and balance, so our peace does not depend on whether things are perfect or whether we are perfect, but coming into harmony with change and impermanence. We're going to get lost again and again. That's okay. Simply start again. Return to the moment and deal with just that moment. Doubt has certain characteristics. Hesitation, uncertainty. Try to open to its difficult energy. Allow compassion to arise for the difficulty, and we gently learn how to let it go. As our awareness becomes stronger, we'll begin to recognize when it's present. And we may be able to allow it to pass away more easily. Try to allow the space in the mind to become comfortable with not knowing. With doubts about the practice, try to clear them up as soon as possible. This is very important. Don't waste your time here. It's very precious. If you're having difficulties understanding, write a note for Steve or myself or talk to us about it in the interviews. We're here to try to help you as best we can. Some of your doubts may dissolve the more we explain the process gradually during this retreat. It's difficult to give you all the information you need to know about this process in one night. And if we did try to give you all the information, it would just appeal to your intellect and it would not be an experiential journey. And actually, it may interfere with the experiential journey and become an intellectual exercise. Try to treat these days as a journey of discovery. So there's sense desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry and doubt. These are the five major hindrances that pull the mind off balance and create difficulties and problems for us until we recognize them, understand the nature of their energies, and learn how to let go of attachment to them. Try to investigate with compassionate understanding. They are arising due to conditioning, how we have thought and reacted in the past. try to investigate without suppressing them and without indulging in them, gradually developing that non-attached awareness of things as they are. Mindfulness gives us the capability of realizing when they're present, then investigate and see how they affect the body and the mind. Investigating and opening in this way, we begin to see their unsatisfactory nature and see how attachment to them and involvement with them create difficulties and stress for ourselves. Understanding much more clearly the law of cause and effect of the body and the mind. Compassion may arise for the difficulties, and we gently learn how to let go. As mindfulness increases, we may be able to recognize them easier and more sooner, and allow them to pass away more easily. In this way, the dominance they once held in the mind gradually decreases. We may also begin to understand how they won't arise in the future. We can use these hindrances for developing more insight and compassion. Vipassana meditation is awareness and understanding of the characteristics of the body and the mind. The breath, the body, the feelings, the thoughts, all is arising, staying for a while, and passing away. We can begin to understand the impermanent nature of things and try to come into more harmony with this impermanent nature. We can begin to understand the stress, the suffering of attachment to self-images based on impermanent things. The development of this compassionate understanding strengthens our wish and our ability to gently let go of attachment. If you wish to keep meditating, you're very welcome. If you wish to go to bed, good night.